Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book, In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Brian.
And this is Nikki from Silver Sun Pickups.
And what are you listening to?
You're listening to Story Behind the Song
on
Consequence.
Right.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Story Behind the Song, the Consequence Podcast Network series where I interview the artists behind some of the most iconic, memorable, and lasting songs of the past few decades. I'm your host, Peter Chadi of Creative Media, and each month I dive deep into two songs with my guests. In this episode, I speak with Brian Aubert and Nikki Monninger of the great gritty guitar band Silver Sun Pickups, another personal favorite. The band just recently released its sixth studio album, Physical Thrills, produced by the legendary Butch Vig of Garbage. It's an album that marks an adventurous and intentional departure of sorts. Its first single, Scared Together, sets the overall tone brilliantly. Is that really a talk box that lead singer, songwriters, and guitarist Aubert features on it? The answer is an absolute and unapologetic yes. The path to Physical Thrills started in 2006, of course, with the band's first studio album, Carnivus, and its breakout and now iconic track, Lazy Eye, which has become a rock and roll music staple over these past 15 years. Why the titles Lazy Eye and Carnivus? And why Silver Sun Pickups? You may think you know, but you likely don't. I didn't, but now you will. And to think that none of this would have ever happened if Aubert didn't see a young woman sitting across the aisle from him on a flight to the UK, pilfering a small bottle of booze from the flight attendant's drink cart. That young woman just happened to be Nikki Monninger, Brian's future bandmate, and that observation led to their signature sound you hear today in yet another legendary rock and roll twist of fate, on top of that twist of lemon with Nikki's gin. You will hear all about that too in this episode. And as always, we discuss two songs. First, Lazy Eye, of course. Was there any doubt? And Brian and Nikki picked Scared Together to be the second song, which was the perfect fit as the two of them took the interview on the road from their rooms in a hotel known to be haunted. And that spooky vibe carried over to imbibe every aspect of our interview, including a few technical glitches that we overcame. This was one of my personal favorites. Brian and Nikki were thoughtful, playful, funny, and downright lazy eye-opening, not to mention humble. Amazingly talented and amazingly grateful to their fans about all of the success they have had. So take a listen as we dive into this latest revealing Story Behind the Song episode with Brian Aubert and Nikki Monninger of Silver Sun Pickups. Welcome, everyone. Welcome, everyone. That was the voice, the laugh of Brian Aubert of Silver Sun Pickups. And I'm joined today by Brian and Nikki Monninger.
Hello.
Of the great band Silver Sun Pickups, which, as I was telling Nikki beforehand, Brian, you're one of my favorite bands. I've seen you so many times over the years.
No.
It's true. I'm not just saying that.
Oh,
it's
you're
true.
So nice.
And I saw you just recently, as I was telling Nikki, at Bottle Rock. And I saw the big show, and I also saw the small little show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to have you on.
What did you think of Bottle Rock's such an interesting affair, isn't it?
Yeah. Listen, my wife and I actually drove our van up and did the van life thing
for
Bottle
Rock
this time from San Diego.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful up there. It's a beautiful festival.
It's a whole other world.
Yeah. The only other festival that we love in North America that we, it reminds me of a little bit, but in a different way, is the Oceaga in Montreal. That is hands down our favorite festival to play at. It's so
magical.
So yes. Magical. And it's kind of, I feel like it's a sort of similar size as Bottle Rock. Do you think, Nick, or is it way bigger?
I don't remember the sizes, but they both are magical.
Because it's sort of kitty corners up with Lollapalooza in Chicago. So it seems smaller because it's sort of the same weekend, but we love it. But if we're a little edgy right now, it's because we're in the Eldridge Hotel in Lawrence, Kansas. That's apparently very haunted, to the point where the Wi-Fi password is ghost 2012. And so,
oh, I love that.
Now, I am not a believer in ghosts. I think that there are things that we don't quite understand. I think ghosts is like a limiting way to do it, and I think ghosts wouldn't just be hanging out in haunted-y places. Having said that, I'm very worried about Nikki. How did you do last night?
Find out it's supposed to be a nice ghost, but I did have to sleep with the lights on and the television on. Mm-hmm. I saw Rocky.
Come on,
the lights
really
and the TV on.
I just,
what about
okay? So you have to explain more
because ghosts don't like TV, so
they hate it. Actually, famously, two things they can't stand: light and TV.
That's awesome.
And then it's
that's why there hasn't been
like
a ghost scene
like...
since the 50s.
But I did think it was funny because it said the ghost likes to turn the air conditioning on, and I'm like, well, it automatically goes on. So
that
there was a couple holes.
That really is a personality trait that tells me that this ghost is just a good old grandpa, because that's such a grandpa move to just roll up and keep turning the futzing with the air conditioner.
Yeah, he wants to make sure. he wants to make sure.
Damn kids with the thermostat. Well, you made it safe and sound.
So,
our drummer Christopher, who's not with us right now, he's actually in the haunted room 506.
So what happened in 506?
I think
sounds very Shining-esque.
It had a little Shining. We just actually played a Shining-y place, didn't we? Yeah.
That, which place?
That Masonic Lodge in
Oh, yes.
In Wichita.
In Wichita.
We felt pretty good coming off of that stage because everything got thrown at us. Everything was breaking down. I had my guitar tech, Dan, my main man, was like doing weird things, trying to patch together stuff, hitting things, guessing when things would happen. And it became a real challenge. And I was really proud of us for making it sort of appear like a show that worked. But that place did not want us.
My guitar strap broke, which has never done before. And I was just trying to.
I looked over at Nikki.
Do I sit down on the ground?
I looked over at you and I thought, well, you're coming off this show pretty clean. And then went, boop.
That's rock and roll so right fine. There.
Well, yeah. I mean, come on.
We were very proud of ourselves for pulling that off.
I bet. Yeah. I bet. And so you are in a haunted place right now. Mm-hmm. And that's perfect, actually, for today, since we're going to be talking about two different songs in the story behind the song, including Scared Together.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's a great little segue into that. But we will get into that. So, everybody, I'm just, you know that I'm with Brian and I'm with Nikki. Yep. Great band.
That was a segue master move.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I thought it was.
We try here at Story Behind the Song.
Yeah.
But we talk about two songs.
Okay.
And we talk about one of your most iconic songs, and I've wanted to talk to you guys about Lazy Eye for a long time, and I just learned why the name of the album is Carnivus.
Mm.
I didn't know
Speaking
that.
Speaking about my grandpa, there's one. My uncle Pili in Hawaii is still around. Carnivus is my mother's maiden name. They're all from Hawaii, except my grandfather was from the South, and his mom was Greek and came to America and changed the Carnivus from a K to a C. Mm. And that's why it appears to be just sort of a weird word. And it was my way of keeping the name alive. You know, my uncle still has it. But once he's gone, that's it. So there's a record of it, which makes me happy. When we were in Greece, when we played there, people knew that. They said, oh yeah, you guys changed it to a C. So, and we didn't do it, but, you know, America did.
They did it to us. No, that's very cool. Like, I love that little touch about having this conversation, because I have followed your music from the very beginning. I remember the very first time I heard Lazy Eye, I was actually driving around in Silicon Valley, and I remember listening to the song, and immediately, obviously, it's an immediate hook and has become a classic and all that. But yeah. So like, that's the beauty of music. And but I didn't know the name of the album was a personal thing like that. I had no idea. So
I think when
thank you.
I think we, especially then, maybe a little less now, but at the time, if we could check two boxes, meaning have something that it sounds like its own thing and a weird word, and maybe even, I don't know, like some pretentious thing we made up or something. If it does that, but we have a direct answer to it, if it gets those two boxes, then we're pretty thrilled. Because people are just like, what is that? But, and, you know, in our head, it's like our album, and it kind of has a lot of weird, I don't know. It's really, I think one of the proudest things that ever happened was when we played on David Letterman for the first time, and I just knew that my grandparents in Hawaii were watching, and my family, like a lot of the cousins, were watching, and he said, Carnivus.
That's very cool.
That was really thrilling.
I bet it was. Well, okay, so I'm going to ask you about that first. How was it the first time you go on a major national show like that on Letterman? And, you know, David Letterman is not the easiest guy.
Not in our... in our experience, we just were lucky because he liked us, and it was apparent. And there's a lot of things about doing that show in particular, that first David Letterman show, because we did it a couple of times, three times, I think. And then later it was Steven.
We would see him watching our practice, which was so nice.
When we'd come back for the second go around, he'd be hiding up there and Paul would be hanging out. And After we played, he was just talking to us, and then he left, and then everybody there was just letting us know, like, whoa, you guys, David really liked you guys. Remember those random, Nikki, those two random women that came out that were dressed as like, showgirls,
kind of like
Vegas showgirls?
Yeah.
And they were like, David really loves you guys. And then they went into the elevator and went to his thing. We were like, what is this? But it was amazing. But we felt really...
I don't know if they were there every day.
We were really excited. But what we learned really fast is, you know, what those things are and the perception of what those things are and what life is actually like. After we did that, we were so excited. And then we flew right back to this tour where we were chasing Wolf Mother. We had a van and they were in a big bus. And so we were trying to get from Texas to Portland. And we had a little time. And the show that we recorded with Dave wasn't airing till the Friday. So it was still about 4 days away. We got caught in a blizzard and our van was swirling and we were stuck in this dry county in Texas for a day and a half or 2 days. I can't remember. To the point where we had to then eventually, once it subsided, get in the van and just drive straight to Portland, like from around Dallas area to make the show. Now, we made the show. Now in my head, I'm like, it's just a show. Everyone be safe. We saw cars flying off the road. It was wild. But
Right in front of us, a car just
slid right off the road.
It was really, we shouldn't have been on the road.
So we were, when it aired, all of our friends in Los Angeles, our phones were just buzzing up, like calling. And they're all in their like cozy places having a little party to watch us. And we're hearing their voices and they're like, oh, yeah, you guys, it's incredible. We're amazing. And we're just freezing in this van, just like shaking, going, thank you. Thank you so much.
The glamorous life of rock and roll.
That sums it up pretty well. Yeah. And that's okay. But that was an eye-opening experience, right? Because they thought we were just like having a successful high five somewhere on the top of Eiffel Tower. Yeah. you know?
Yeah.
Just like, we're trying to get to the shows to open up for Wolf Mother.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It must've been an experience to meet with Dave. Look, there's so many things that I want to ask you guys about. But so your latest album or your new album, is coming out
Friday.
Well, coming out in August, a little bit later in August. And it was produced by Butch Vig.
BV.
And Shirley Manson was just one of my recent guests, like two episodes ago. So she was great.
She's the best.
So sweet.
I love her.
Garbage is another great band. Yeah. Another great band.
Well, also, like getting Garbage is it, the culture capital of Garbage is grown to such an amazing degree that I'm so proud to see it, you know, like their best now probably, and her as a
so
spokesperson and a front person is just like, she's just perfect for right now.
Authentic.
Oh man. Authentic. Oh, Shirley's the best. Mm-hmm. She hates balloons for real. And I put balloons all over the studio. Because Billy, her husband, is Butch Vig's engineer, so we know Billy really well, and I put balloons all over in there, and Shirley walked in and wrote on the balloon, "Fuck your balloons, Brian." Love Shirley.
How can you hate balloons? But
I think it's because it's at shows. It's a whole thing. But I just recently saw her at Hollywood Bowl where something did happen, and she went off about balloons, and I went, "Oh," because I was going to bring a balloon as a joke, and I texted Billy like, yeah, "I'm glad I didn't bring that," but. I think she doesn't want anything coming at her head. I understand that.
Gotcha. Well, makes
the
sense.
Peach balls that
she's amazing. Have you talked to Butch yet?
I have not.
You've got to. He's to be the nicest guy you've ever met.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Okay.
Put in a good
word.
Well,
guess what? Coming up here right now, we got... Hold on.
Okay. So... I want to get into, first of all, before we get into the first song, Lazy Eye, the story, just how you two met, and I think there's an airplane story someplace.
We were both on a study abroad trip, basically. She was at a different college.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Elmo, go ahead, Nick, what you're...
Oh, yeah, both of our colleges combined to do the study abroad program to Cambridge, England.
What colleges?
Just like a general, we had a King's College teacher there, but it was like, get a bunch of Americans over there, exchange them, and they kind of like do these classes.
It's basically for
this YMCA thing, but you have like teachers come in and we can kind of run around.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like,
yeah, it's basically for kids to have fun and visit Cambridge. You know, there's no
cultural sort of thing.
It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we met right before and we were on the plane. And then at the time, you only had to be 18 to drink in England, but 21
you're going right
here,
to
I
it.
Think we were like
you're going
19.
Right to it.
I love
and
it.
So I took a whatever bottle.
Zuh.
Brian, I think it was, I don't know, so long ago, but Brian said I stole it, but technically they're free.
I mean, I just mean it was like the way you went about it.
I snuck it.
It just made me go like, oh, yeah. This person has a lot more layers than I assumed.
Because and that it's just like
she was just looking away. And this little hand will go, weep. And weep.
I need to fly next year.
I know. That's great.
Yeah.
Next to the
when you could still smoke on planes too, when they're like, "Oh, you want the smoking section? That's one
row."
I don't remember.
I don't remember that, but I think it was not. That's not true.
Okay, so when Nikki grabs that, Brian, and you see the layer that you didn't expect, what's the next move?
Well, the judgment's on me, right? Like, what am I doing, assuming about people from Orange County and things like that? You know. I'm already like, I mean, I'm also sitting next to a guy we don't know who's a very close friend of ours still to this day and one of the loveliest men we've known. And it's Christopher Cafferty, but he looks like G.I. Joe. He's like 6'5" and he had these big army bags. And we're just like, I sat next to him. He was like passed out. He finally woke up and I thought, who is this guy? I knocked and said, "Hey, I'm Brian." And he took his earphones off and went, "Huh?" And I'm, Brian, what are you listening to? And he goes, oh, I'm listening to Miss Saigon. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, I just listen to musicals. And so, I'm just like, oh my God, this is amazing. I love these people. And he was like the artiest, sweetest person I've ever seen. He's like the Terminator who paints flowers. Like,
and that we're still really good friends with lots of people on this program. And, mm-hmm. you know, and Brian and I are still friends. Right, Brian, Brian?
What's that behind, Nikki? What's behind you? Look behind you.
I think it's a ghost.
Oh, okay. Like, no, no.
You know, light, I watched several YouTubes of people's experience here, and then that made me feel safer because I'm like, nothing happens. But still,
Can I give you a little hint? Nothing's gonna happen.
Yeah, okay.
No. That's not my question. I'm just saying that. Okay, you see somebody taking the bottle, and then you just tap and say, "Hey, you know how?"
Well, basically, then we became friends over the couple months that we were there. You know,
I see.
And so we hung out. And we'd go see bands together. Like she invited us to see Radiohead, and this was in 1994. So we saw them in this tiny club for their Iron Lung EP. And changed our lives. And we were very like, we were kind of the, there's about 30 people in that group. And we were the 10 or so that were not really wanting to hang out with Americans. We were kind of integrating into as much as we could into the Britain life, you know, into Cambridge and tried to meet British people and stuff like that. And so we really got along. And
well, which is such an important thing is to meet people beyond the United States.
And, it changed my life.
Experience different cultures.
Changed my life forever, you know? Just it almost makes me feel like this should be a Rumspringa for Americans. So I guess everywhere there should be one, but for Americans in particular, you should, and I don't care if it's just Toronto or Vancouver, you just should be forced out of your country for a while. Because even like Canada, it can just help you, not other people, you know? Traveling changes your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly. So, I want to get into the name and again, this was kind of I had thought it meant something differently than it actually does. And it's very personal to me, you two, because my daughter is just moving into Silver Lake as we speak, literally as we speak.
Fancy pants.
Right next to the Whole Foods in Silver Lake.
Oh, yeah.
And
of course.
I go there
all the time.
So the we're going to have another alcohol-ish string to this conversation because
the Silver Sun.
Yes, the Silver Sun.
Well, again, going back to that carnivus thing we're talking about. You know how it's sort of like a word that could mean just means an album, or people can kind of take it and mean a bunch of different things, but really we have a meaning for it. You know, we needed a band name while we were just kind of messing around because we wanted to send this tape that Nikki made it from a boombox into CMJ, New York, just for fun. I didn't really believe in it, but Nikki really believed in it. So we had a band name. I just thought because we live on the corner of like Silver Lake and Sunset. And I remember bands like Beachwood Sparks and bands that were naming themselves after areas. I just really, really liked that. And the Silverstone Liquor Store was a place that we'd go pick up stuff all the time. And it was like a focal point for a lot of people who'd run in there before you'd meet them somewhere else because that was like the store. And so we just called ourselves Silverstone Pickups. It was actually really fast. And with the idea, like, it felt like a little gang to me, like, oh, here come the pickups or something, like a little bike gang.
that's awesome. And I always thought that it was pickup from like a guitar.
Yeah, people have said a lot of things like old trucks and things like that, but really it's just a nod to this community space and community that we came from that's honestly quite different now, you know, like it's a different kind of place. So now it feels a little nostalgic to me. Honestly, now it's just us. It's just our name. It just exists, you know.
Well, I'm sure. It's Silver Lake is still a cool vibe, artsy, that kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I'm going to take a quick break, guys.
Oh.
And then we're going to get right back into the first song and the story behind the song for Lazy Eye. So we'll be right back.
Behind you, Nikki. Right behind you.
Oh my God. I'm so scared.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We have one more night of this.
Okay, we are back.
Nikki has one back more night of this, she said.
Yeah.
One more night of the ghosts.
I told Todd never again.
Oh, come on.
Although I'm sure he will. It's okay. Yeah, no. Yeah. Once I found out it was friendly, then I'm okay with it.
I'm really disappointed in myself that I didn't like hook up some sort of like fishing wire thing or something to have like dangling.
Like in the Brady Bunch.
Yeah. Just like the Brady Bunch.
Well, it keeps it interesting, I guess, when you're on the road all the time to have different experiences. So this is your experience.
Yeah, honestly, Nikki, really, if you see a ghost, that's going to be life changing, don't you think? That would be amazing. So look forward to it.
I'll let you all know. Right. I'm going to get my camera out and film everything.
Oh, ghosts hate cameras.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Ghosts hate cameras. Famously, they hate cameras.
I like.
But it'd be pretty amazing right now. If we had it for this video, it'd be... Quite
it would
amazing.
Definitely change at least for a year what all three of us would have to talk about with people for
a while.
Oh
no, the lights are changing.
Oh no.
All right, so we're going to talk about two different songs.
Brian
is, for those of you who are listening, was just levitating off the chair.
Just a little bit, so you can imagine.
But so let's levitate into Lazy Eye.
Okay.
The great song from your first album. Mm-hmm. And your latest album is your sixth, I believe.
Yeah.
But just in your own way, because what I like to do is hopefully break some new ground into just how you feel about the song, how it came to be, like literally the first germ that came into your mind of, or the seed, the kernel, and then the process for bringing that and bringing it to life. So why don't you two walk us through that?
Mm. When did you hear it first? Did you hear me playing it?
Well, I think Brian would always play things because at that point we were roommates in Silver Lake. And so he would always be playing, you know, guitar riffs. So a lot of times, you know, I would just hear this song start to develop. So it was nice because at the same time, you know, I could think of like, what could I, you know, play on bass with it? So it was very nice to see a song develop right from the beginning organically. And then that was one of the few songs that we recorded one of our first songs. So we recorded in our practice space to send to CMJ. Now that version is probably like 15 minutes long. You know, it's just us.
Really slow.
Sort of.
And y'all, you just hear me going.
It was really slow. So it took us years to actually record. Yeah. It took us years to record anything. So that song actually had so much time to just sit and marinate and develop. The nice thing about this song is that it did happen so organically. So we would start to just practice things and we'd be in the rehearsal space and we would like slowly develop the song so that when we actually recorded it officially for Carnivus, we had our producer, Dave Cooley, come in. And he kept wanting to shorten it or to like rearrange it so that it had a traditional like verse, chorus, verse, bridge. And no matter what we did, it was really, you know, it just didn't feel right.
Well, like in the beginning, when I think about it, it's so linear, like a linear kind of song. And it reminds me of this sort of these like conveyor belt ideas that we had. So since we didn't really have a solid foundation on the song exactly, we built these early songs in a way that we could go on and on a little bit live. Tempo didn't really matter what our drummer was playing. We can kind of keep going and just feel it out. And we were really into back then the, which we called like the sparkle horse kind of drums, where it was always to us like you take one snare away. If for like 5 minutes you play the same beat and you take one snare away for a second and it's going to feel like the most insane musical dynamic instead of just having fills and things all the time. So we like hypnotic and simple and sort of layers on things. And that's sort of how we were building not just like the songs, but
a way for us to be able to play things live that we could shape as time goes on. Does that make sense? Like, oh, I did that live over the same kind of thing. And Lazy Eye was definitely one of those. It's as you were saying, Nikki, it's a song that kind of, there was school, if you went to school for songwriting, you would get an F because, you know, there's no, like, I don't know where things are, what a chorus is, or we still have problems with that. If we have choruses and things, it's accidental.
But did you know, okay, so you had this going on for, you had been working on it for a long time, or it was just kind of a living thing, and then you brought it into the studio and you transformed it. But as soon as you hit that final recipe of it, did you know that you had something? Like, did it feel really special at the time?
Well, like I said, when we, like, originally, our producer Dave, who we love, he was just trying to reshape it into a, you know, a more traditional song. And then ultimately we had a talk with him, like, we're just not feeling this new version.
Yeah,
we love it the way it is, and we've lived with it for so long, and this way feels really special to us. So we ended up recording it, you know, so it's not, you know, linear, or, you know, it just does its own thing.
Right.
Which is the way that we felt it. We just felt it should be, you know, it worked better that way. So, but it was always, you know, one of our favorite songs, but we never really thought of it as a single because it is, you know, kind of a long song.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the song that people liked at shows, but it just, you know, to us, we had such a soft spot for it, but we didn't think of it as, you know, a single. It was really interesting. There was a radio, a DJ that shortened it and then started playing it on the radio. And so that's the version we ended up using. And then after that, it just kind of took off. But it's not something that, you know, we would have guessed would have done so well. Because also, yeah, when we were making Carnivus, everything feels like a whole, like our album's like a journey. We don't think of things in terms of, you know, singles. We think of it as how does it fit within the album. And but we just kind of leave that sort of thing up to, you know, our management or whoever wants to decide what should be played. But I love how everything was so organic with this song, and that it kind of like took on a life of its own.
Let's talk. I want to get into the lyrics. We talked a little bit about how the music came to you, so that was first. But Lazy Eye.
Yeah, I mean, it was I first time kind of writing lyrics. That was the hardest part for me. Just even being able to access that kind of writing, the critic for me in my head was brutal. Like on everything else, it was a little okay, but for some reason writing, I found it really painful and hard. And so that song is just sort of about like I'm entering like a public arena a little bit, even though it's just like us playing shows and stuff like that. And just trying to put all the things that make you feel insecure, all your little strange things. I have a lazy eye. I've had surgery on it 3 times since I was a kid. All just the weird things that make you feel insecure. I just wanted to put them all out there and just be like, okay, I'm just going to like, this is it. Here we are. Here I am. This is how I feel. I don't feel comfortable. This is weird. Look at all you guys. I'm from upstage. I'm on stage right now. My wandering lazy eyes, mad eye moodying around the room, and everybody looks so intimately put together, so perfect. It looks so weird. Now, I know none of that's true, but that is what my brain was saying. And that's what Lazy Eye was basically about.
See, again, I had no idea all this time.
But I mean, it's like, that's what it means to me. If you hear a certain thing, and poems read different for people, words have different meanings to people. I think there should always be enough space in a song for someone to insert their own experiences in. That's what I think, because that's how I relate to songs. I actually don't care that much about what they're really about. Once in a while, I find it kind of interesting, but all the songs that I've ever loved in my life, Magic from Olivia Newton-John, which is just
kind of a lot. Yeah, they should be open to interpretation.
I can't explain why I have such a melancholy feeling for that song. I've always had it since I was a kid. I know it's from Xanadu. She's probably singing about roller skates, but that's not what I'm getting. You know? And so I feel like it's, we're never going to be the kind of band, whether it's because we're too timid to, or because we actually don't want to, that's up for, I wonder about that sometimes, but we're never going to be a band that's trying to smash you over the head with the meaning of something. Like, you're going to get a general vibe clearly, but it's always been important to, for people to bring their own experiences into the songs. And after all these years, especially with Lazy Eye, they really have.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's for many artists to not explicit's the wrong word, but I know what you mean. A little bit more abstract.
Some people are great at it though. Like being straightforward. I always find like Jeff Tweedy. I think Jeff Tweedy is a bit poetic and not, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I just think some Morrissey in the early days was just so clever. Like the early Smiths, you're just like, yeah, you're supposed to spit on someone. Some people are great at it, but I'm not one of those people.
Got it. Well, that's, thank you for taking us in that journey behind the song.
Yeah.
I would love to talk about it more, but I want to get into the second song too. And I don't want to take up too much of your time, but we're going to take another quick 5 second or five second break.
And then if you want, email the pod. And
yeah,
about like your ghost stories, and he'll answer all of them.
And Nikki and Brian will pick their favorite ghost story.
For
a future episode.
We'll come to your house. Perfect. And Nikki will sleep in your room.
And we'll be right back with Silver Sun Pickups.
A lot of people live in denial because they think that to be realistic is to be depressing.
I'm Dr. Mike, host of Going There.
It was the first song where I wrote about how I felt like my depression was killing me and I didn't want it.
Going There breaks the stigma of mental health issues by having real, honest conversations with your favorite musicians, including Alessia Cara, Lizzie Hale, Jewel, Jason Isbell, Gerard Way, Lauren Gray, Shamir, and Barty Strange.
There was something there that was so raw, where I was like, wow, I can't believe someone would say that.
Let's go there on Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network, every other Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back with Brian and Nikki of Silver Sun Pickups, and going into the second song, which is their new single from the latest album, Physical Thrills, and the song is, as we mentioned a couple times now, which is perfect for today, Scared Together. So let's get into that. First of all, why did you pick that song to be the second song that we discussed today?
It seemed, I think we picked two, really. There's the ones that we wanted people to hear before the album came out were Scared Together and Alone on a Hill, because this record... the experience of making it was so playful, and it felt irreverent and wild, and it goes into so many different kind of places that we wanted to put two songs that were very different from each other out to give you a little bit of an idea of where we're headed. Because I think that if you hear Scared Together and that's it, you might get a false idea about where we're headed. It's going to be quite a ride if you care to join us. It'll be quite a ride. But Scared Together just had, it sounds so fundamental and blocky and chunky, you know, and it's hard to have something that's like squawking like a talk box like that and moves in the slinky way to not be the obvious first single, you know? And I think thematically, I think I wanted there to be something that everybody could relate to, because we're all there too, this pandemic and the isolation and everything that goes with it, and what kind of brain space you live in through that whole time. I definitely wanted to reference that when our first song after the pandemic is out, and I thought Scared Together,
it's appropriate to
having it be like that, but also a song that's sort of as wild and bouncy. I wanted it to be almost like an acknowledgement of what was happening, but also a very playful one and not a melancholy one, like a very slinky, devilishy one, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, like I said, I've followed your music from the very beginning, and that song is, I was just rocking out to it.
Talk box, baby.
Talk box.
It was great. Like,
I love that talk box. I want to put talk box on everything.
Brian was obsessed with the idea of using that, and it, you know, it worked out really well.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with
it. He was passionate about using the talk box.
Tremolo, there's just like a bunch of things on this record that we would usually would shy away from. We always wanted to have a little bit of all the sounds to be ambiguous and for you to not quite know what was going on. And on this record, we felt comfortable enough to have things represent what they are. Like have a piano sound like a piano, have a whirly sound like a whirly, have instrument, much more acoustic on there, much more things that aren't hiding so much. And in the days of computers and things like that, I wanted there to be representation of things that I loved and haven't really heard much of in a long time. And just this record seems to be just accessing a million different things you've loved over your whole life. In as far as me go, I go, and I've never really done anything with like tremolo guitar. I really wanted to do that. And I wanted to feel like we're using an analog tremolo, like I wanted it to be known. So this talk box thing that I had in my head for the song, it was important to me, and Butch really got this, and Billy Bush really got this, that it sounded like we're using one. Like it has a modern take on it because of certain ways we're using it, but we're using a physical object, you know? It's not a program or any of that stuff. We generally don't do that stuff, but I just wanted it to feel a little like, I wanted the people who love that thing or haven't really heard it in a while or have a weird relationship with it go, oh, whoa, a talk box, what a weird choice. And then people who haven't heard it to go, what is that?
And it's such a dominant part of the song. It really ties, like brings it all together.
It's not the most subtle. Bushwick was not thrilled with it at first.
That surprises me a little bit, actually, because he's such a rocker.
He had a negative experience in Garbage. He tried to use it in Garbage, and he didn't like it. So he was not as excited as all of us. And
because it's weird, because he's usually open to everything. But
the thing about Bushwick that makes him so wonderful, besides being a great person, is that all of that experience and all of that knowledge he's had of making these fundamentally music-changing records, right? He does not sit there and feel like he's got it figured out. He doesn't think, oh, I know what I'm doing. Just give me the thing and I got my thing. He is always looking to be lost. He's always to have wanderlust in music, just like he did back in the day. He's just as curious now as he was then. The tools have changed, but his curiosity hasn't. You know, his ability to get to places is faster than it used to be, but he's still trying to get lost, trying to get wandered, trying to uncover things, and wants to be confused. And we are the perfect band for him because we're always baffling each other. But you are right. The one part of adventure he didn't want to do, because he did try it out, was the talk box. So he set up we had basically this song that we were building, and we did everything. I had this baritone guitar, and we were doing everything in our power to simulate this thing that I wanted to do, but we weren't putting that thing in yet. And so you could just feel it. I'm just like, Butch, the song just feels like there's these things orbiting a blank hole, and you know what's in that hole, right, Butch? Talk box. So finally, Billy Bush got the thing, which I loved. It came back to the studio. Song has been now recorded, except for that. I walked in, and it looked like Indiana Jones staring at that idol in Raiders of the Lost Ark. The light, like before he the boat boulder. I mean, it was just like a light shining down on the stool. Because Billy Bush is over the moon with this. He can't wait. And Butch is like, okay, let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it. Hook it up, get the baritone guitar, get the tone, stick this tube in my mouth, put the mic in, and we go, all right, do it. And we start. And Butch was just like, never mind. I love it. All of a sudden, he wanted me to do like 20 takes, and he loved it until my molars were rattling.
Yeah. It's interesting seeing you using it for the first time.
So like, fun.
It's fun. It was a fun day.
That's very, very cool. And it's all, you know, you mentioned something about, well, he's still very curious. You can just get from start to finish faster, but it's kind of nice. The nostalgia of you going back to something from your earlier days too, and tying that into it and making it a little bit organic that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a beautiful thing too.
I mean,
that
everybody working with a guy like Butch is how we could even do this, because things move so fast. This is our second record with him. We love him so much. We really work well together. And it's such a thrilling thing. We're so lucky. Like, it's not lost on us how lucky we are. Like, we always sort of feel that, you know, that Butch is like a good friend of ours. And this person who's just so uniquely qualified to be making any kind of art involving Sonics.
Uh-huh.
And we get to play with him.
We're very fortunate.
It's pretty wild. And because he's so quick and he's so gifted at getting things done fast, it allows me, my mind, which is flying, things fly out of my mind and they can keep coming out and keep coming out and keep coming out, and he can just catch them and we can do things. And it doesn't take that long to make something that feels really grand.
It leaves a room for experimentation, because he's ready to capture it.
We can improv a lot.
Yeah.
So you were just saying that you have all these ideas flying around all the time. Do you both have a certain songwriting style, or do songs or melodies come to you when you wake up from your night's sleep or at a certain time, or is it totally random?
It's just random. I've just always had, and at this point, like, I should be taking notes. I should be making lists. I should be doing these things. These are things I know that I should be doing. It'd be nothing but helpful for me down the line. Mm-hmm. But because I've been able to get away with it all the way to this point, I still won't. I'm like, well, an album came out.
Yeah.
So it would have been easier. So I try to have my phone ready for voice memos at any second. I'm going to voice memo anything I do, because that's how I got to put these things somewhere. And when they come, I never really know, you know. And I noticed that if I listen to a voice memo from 2 months ago and it's the exact same one that I just hummed in, or I just kind of did a goofy version of it, then there's something really there. I keep coming back to it. And eventually I just have so many that I kind of go down the line and we start focusing on them. And that's how it works. And then normal times, I bring it to the band first, but this time we just went right to Butch and waited for them to get vaccinated so they can come meet us and just start working on a record that they haven't heard yet.
So this album and the freedom that you gave yourselves to try new things sounds like it was a reaction to the pandemic. And is that right?
Yeah.
That you feel that way?
I would say everything is a reaction to just us, who we are and how we're feeling. And since we are alive and we have feelings, the pandemic is a big part of it.
Yeah, well, sure.
I think the only thing that I was really conscious about as far as the pandemic went, I don't know why I felt this way, because it's not like I felt like we'd get a reaction from people that I didn't want, meaning I didn't want it to feel like, well, they had some time, so they went and made a record. You know, I just, in this one in particular, I knew a lot of people were doing like pandemic art and things like that. I wanted this to feel really, like a really complete record and it's not a pandemic record. You know, it was made in the pandemic, and there's lots of these things about that kind of what can happen to you or things in your mind in the record for sure. But it was more important to us to make this thing feel like this big piece of art in a way that so we worked really hard to make it sound very like a big cohesive record, meaning there was music themes coming in and out of stuff. There's little shanties. Like if you care to listen to it from beginning to end, we wanted it to feel really, just whatever the opposite of
just like a unit, like as a piece that you've listened
like
to.
Like I read somewhere already that
they're not individual songs are part of a unit.
Like I we just did an interview recently where someone said, and they were bored, so they made a record. They immediately said that. And I thought, oh God, that's really not what happened. First of all, Nikki.
That's not what we're about.
Nikki
that's,
has two kids. You know I have a kid.
We were just.
I'll tell you one thing. I was not in the pandemic bored.
Yeah.
I was busy. I was busy. Yeah. We were busy.
Yeah, and so, I think we were grateful to be able to come back together. Like once we were able to get our vaccinations in, everyone felt Butch felt comfortable to have us over. We were just like grateful to get started again. And, you know, our kids had just gone back to school. So it felt like we were ready to start something and to get back together. So
And the way you mentioned like the dream shanties and these motifs that come back.
Fun.
Reminds me of, and I'll mention another one of my favorite bands, Manchester Orchestra. I was interviewing them.
Oh, Andy.
They're great.
They're like family to us.
He's an amazing poet. You know, he's amazing, I think. I think their music is wonderful. And mm-hmm. We were talking about the similar sort of theme in their you know, latest album, Million Masks of God, mm-hmm. and how they gave themselves the freedom to bring in some of the same moments from one song and tie it into a later song.
It's fun
and
to
they
do.
Didn't worry about repetition. They weren't afraid of that because some of the great songs from the beginning of time, you know, the great classic orchestras and symphonies always brought motifs back.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sure. I mean, yes, that's the word afraid is alarming already. It's just like, is there something you're afraid of?
I mean, why would you
as far that? As like, yeah, what, like, what are you, what are, you can do whatever you want. Like you can make this one song, the whole record. I mean, I feel like if you're not all the time, but I think that if you are afraid of something, then you really care about it. You know, like it's something that keeps coming to you. It's up to you to do it or not. But if for some reason you actually are making a mental note to be afraid of something, you're interested in it. And why? Yeah. Why, what are you afraid of? Like, what is
it's provoking.
All you can control is how you, all you can control is making this thing the best way you know how. And you just want to walk away from it feeling like you gave it your all. That's all, you know?
Yeah. No, that's cool.
I mean,
I'm going to do a quick, go ahead, Nikki.
No, I was going to say, I think for both of us growing up, like one of the albums that made it such a big impression on us was, you know, Purple Rain. And that felt like, and that made
my
such a...
My
hometown. Are you in Minneapolis?
But like we, as big fans of that, like that was such a cohesive album. And you know,
yeah,
I just love the parts that intermingle together.
Oh man, Purple Rain is insane.
So that's probably like
I remember,
album, the biggest influence, you know. On my life, probably on Brian's too.
Yeah, this is definitely our most, I mean, it's not a concept record at any level, but it's as close to one as we've gotten.
Yeah.
I remember when Purple Rain, okay, just one little memory lane.
Come on, hit me.
Those were my days. Those were, you know, kind of my salad days. And so I remember Purple Rain was coming out. We were in line opening night. You know, I used to go to First Avenue. I live in San Diego now, but I grew up in Minneapolis. And so Prince, of course, was
love Minneapolis.
Everything.
I love it. I love Minneapolis.
I like to hear that. Okay, I'm going to do a quick lightning round because I want to get into just a quick like gut reactions to things. What's the favorite your favorite song that you've ever written?
Sticks and Stones.
Oh, I love that. That is one of my new favorites. I do always go back to Growing Old.
That's a good
I love that one.
Sticks and Stones for some reason.
Sticks and Stones.
It's on the new record. When I'm playing it, I don't know how.
It's been really fun. We started playing it acoustic and it's
and I'm just like, what?
Grows.
How did I do that? For me personally, I just get tickled with that song. It's like I just feel like a grown up.
Yeah.
And what song do you wish you had written but didn't write?
Oh. First thing that comes to mind, Jesus, Etc. by Wilco. Just because we're just on the side stage with them and watch them play. And we're just, again, blown away by how amazing they are, how much we love them. And they play Jesus, Etc. And it just brought me back into like A vocal warp. Bazillion dimensions into my mind of times and places. And I just thought, what a perfect
every
song.
Every year they get better and better. They're so incredible.
They are an American treasure.
Yeah, that was such a great album.
That was a profound, at least for our group of friends and stuff like that. Yankee Hotel Foxtrot was like, you know, Okay Computer or It's a Wonderful Life, Sparkle Horse, or Soft Bulletin. Remember those things that just came in like bam? And then it was also the record that, you know, many people don't know this, but became the poster child for what's wrong with the record industry. Yeah. Remember that? That movie became like, look at how wild this is. They got dropped from being musically adventurous.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Nikki, I'm going to ask you this one first.
Oh.
If you didn't become a musician, what do you think you would be doing right now?
I would like to work at a museum.
Ah, what kind of museum?
Probably modern art museum. I went to school when I finally graduated. I went to UCLA, and that was my major was history and art history, and I always had a passion for that and anything historical. So when we go to a lot of cities, I love to go to their modern art museums or any museum they have.
Do you give yourself the time when you're on the road to be able to do that?
I do usually. At this tour in particular, something happened to my back, so I've been resting it, but that's usually the first thing I do is go to a museum. It just kind of like fills me up emotionally.
It's been helpful for us all to get cultured over the years. Like, that's been her thing forever. And so now it's like, it helps you get out of the bus and go see the world and learn that, man, a modern art museum in a town is such a good introduction to a town.
And in Minneapolis, the Walker Art Center, that's one of my favorites.
That's such a good one.
Yeah, for sure.
Walker Art Center is a classic. The Guthrie Theater is classic, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's so much stuff there.
Yes, I love it. A promo for my hometown. And Brian, how about you? What do you think you would be doing if you didn't pick up the guitar or start writing songs?
Oh, what would I be doing? I think
he'd make a great host of something.
That's a terrible question. I'd be a host of something.
Okay.
I feel like my first job I ever wanted when
Medieval Manor.
Yeah, I would be one of those. Yeah, maybe I would be dressed up as Spider-Man.
In front of the...
I'd be good at like Universal Studios or something, dressed up like...
Tour guide.
Like, hello, welcome. You know what kind of wood this is? Welcome to California. Right over there, they filmed... I love it. They're always talking about movies that no kid knows at all. And over there, Jaws 4, The Revenge, this time it's personal, is being filmed. And see these trees over here? That's a certain kind of tree. You know what it's made of? Hollywood. Anyway, coming up next, Leave It to Beavers.
There you go. Okay, so Brian, I'm going to ask you this last question first. What artist is on endless loop for you right now?
Sinead O'Connor.
Oh, Sinead O'Connor. Yeah. I love Sinead O'Connor.
Deep dive into early Sinead O'Connor stuff.
I think
because I've been honestly before Stranger Things kind of got gave Kate Bush this well deserved push. I mean, that song has been one of my favorite songs my whole life, I feel like.
Oh, completely.
It's never ending, and of course everyone loves it. Of course it's going to be. So all you got to do is let people hear it. It goes with my theory that we're always feel lucky to be a band that people care about at, in any level whatsoever, because I feel like there's enough old music that people haven't heard in the world that we could keep just doing that and showing that to people. And there's no need for fans like us. So we're appreciative that anybody cares. But through this whole Kate Bush dive that I went on a couple of years ago, I started eyeballing Sinead O'Connor, and I didn't really know her music very well, except for what, you know, that, the big stuff. And then I did know Put Your Hands on Me, that song that I always thought was so good. So I started deep diving into her first record. Whoa, she's so punk rock. She's so good. Not a fair shake. No fair shake for that person. Like, she was doing some stuff that seems so tame now and just sexist, crazy, you know, stuff going on with her is unbelievable. Because, man, she's so bad. Yeah. She's so badass.
She's an amazing artist.
Straight up.
For everybody who's out there listening, you know, obviously you heard from Brian and Nikki, but Lion and the Cobra, the first album.
Unbelievable.
It will blow your mind.
Yeah.
That this young woman at the time was able to come up with this. And listen to the song Troy.
That song, right? Like Troy. What a great record, you know? And then for that record to have come out and then her to get so popular for the next record to be like almost
condemned.
It's almost damaging. You know, it's like, of course, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Putting her on, you're going to put her on Saturday Night Live with Andrew Dice Clay? Like, what are we talking about? I love that. I love doing deep dives. I mean, I went into like a Pink Floyd realm a year or two ago where it's like I didn't really know Dark Side of the Moon. Like the myths and stuff, the Wizard of Oz, all my stoner friends when I was a kid, I was like, yeah. But as an adult, I'm like, oh, these guys coming together and making these weird songs, just hearing what they came up with just blows my mind. Like I love metal.
No, absolutely.
And all those records.
Huge Pink Floyd fan.
Yeah,
for sure.
So good, right?
one other album, and I'm sure you love it. And then Nikki, I want to ask you, Universal Mother is such a great album from Sinead O'Connor too, which is very peaceful. It's very understated.
Yeah.
But beautiful, haunting lyrics, just amazing.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of like, I love that record, is really great. And if you ever do like a PJ Harvey dive, I'm a big PJ Harvey fan too. And she has a record called White Chalk that is probably about 2008. And it's just her playing piano and very soft songs, and it's so stunning.
And Nikki, how about you? What are you listening to?
I mean, speaking of Prince, it's been so nice because I've been playing Purple Rain for my daughters now because of they saw Sing 2 and loved it. I'm like, well, listen to the whole album then.
Is it in Sing 2?
It's in Sing 2, yeah.
Wow. Which one, Darling Nikki?
Let's go crazy.
That would be
so excited to have a song that had my name in it, but I didn't really understand the lyrics.
Your mom's like, oh cool, let me hear this.
But I remember the day we bought that at the mall, that album. It was like, you know, definitely changed my life. So, and I was so happy that to share it with my daughters now and have it, you know, have them love it too.
Purple Rain's gonna crush forever.
Forever.
That record. It's like from beginning to end. It's like, it's psychedelic. It's heavy metal. It's, you know, it's his just most insane
record.
Such
an incredible guitar player.
It's
amazing.
Transcends some of that stuff that he's been doing. Like that record in particular just goes for it.
It just, a couple episodes ago, I had Sheila E. on.
Oh, you did? And, what?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. How was that?
It was awesome.
Wow.
I know her pretty well. She's amazing. She's an incredible person. And
Erotic
to
City.
Hear her to hear the genesis of her music and how it came to be and the confidence that he had in her and gave to her. So that was beautiful. But
that's cool.
The two of you, the two of you are, let me tell you something. I'm really, you seem like such wonderful, humble people and an amazing band that true artists in every sense of the word. And it really was very much a pleasure to have you on.
Thank
I can't
you.
Wait to hear all of Physical Thrills.
Sorry about all the ghosty
song,
stuff, the troubles.
Yeah. Right. We normally don't talk about ghosty
Sorry about
stuff.
All, no, sorry about all the technical ghosty stuff.
It's authentic. I'll see you guys again in San Diego. We're excited to see you
to
down
that.
In San Diego.
Great.
But
we'll see that.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure,
thank
Ren.
You.
It was a pleasure.
Nikki.
Hey, bye.
Whoa!
That was Brian O'Bear and Nikki Monninger of the great band Silver Sun Pickups sharing the story behind the band's breakout epic song, Lazy Eye. I'm your host, Peter Chotti. You can follow me on Twitter at pchotti. That's P, C like cat, S like Sam, A like apple, T like Tom, H like Harry, Y, and at Creative Media. That's creativemedia.biz. For more of the story behind the song, make sure you like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And tune in on the third Monday of every month for new episodes. Also, make sure you're following the Consequence Podcast Network to keep up to date with all our series at consequence.net/consequence-podcast-network. And as always, thanks for listening to The Story Behind the Song.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.